morning, and welcome to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. My name is Steve Gregg, and we are live for a half hour. We do have an echo on my headphones, and I need our producer to do something about that, if we can do that, please. I'm hearing my echo about a half second delayed. Anyway, I will continue. Ah, that's better, much better. Thank you very much. We have open phone lines for you. If you have questions about the Bible or the Christian faith, we're beginning another broadcast week. We only have a half hour each weekday morning together, but we would like to use it to the fullest advantage by taking your calls, as many as we can, and seeking to address questions you raise about the Bible or the Christian life, or maybe you have a difference of opinion from that of the host and would like to bring that up for conversation. We can do that. And so let me give you a phone number. The number is 1-800-227-5278. That's 1-800-227-5278. And if you'd like to give me a call, I believe you could probably get through pretty quickly. We're experiencing only a few challenges technologically here today, but it should not interfere with our normal conversation. So give me a call if you'd like to talk today about whatever's on your mind. I received an email from Jordan, who's not the country of Jordan, but a young man or a man named Jordan. He said, "Dear Steve, I would like to know why skeptics like to point out that there are two Ten Commandments in the book of Exodus. They claim that because the commandments in chapters 20 and 34 are different, that there are two Ten Commandments. They also like to point out in Exodus 34:28 that it was Moses who wrote the new tablets and not God, as stated earlier in the chapter. How can these two chapters be reconciled?" You know, I've always wondered why skeptics say there are two sets of Ten Commandments in Exodus. I don't think there are. We have them in chapter 20, of course, when God first gives them to Israel. But when you look at chapter 34, you don't find necessarily a new set of Ten Commandments. It's true some of the commandments are repeated, but then obviously some of the commandments are repeated many times in the Bible. We don't actually have a listing of the Ten Commandments in chapter 34. And I think that this is just another way that critics who have not really studied the Bible well, or maybe they've studied it but not objectively and they're only looking for faults, have tried to read into this, into the Bible, something that looks contradictory to them. But anyone who wishes can read for himself Exodus 34, and you do not find a separate set of Ten Commandments. You just have some commandments, it's true. Now, it does say in chapter 34, verse 28, that Moses wrote the Ten Commandments, but it doesn't say that those Ten Commandments were enumerated earlier in the chapter. So I'm just saying this is sort of a totally fabricated problem. Now, there are problems from time to time that are more difficult to resolve for the believer, you know, where the Bible does appear to have, passages that have discrepancies in them. They can, generally speaking, be resolved, and often without very much difficulty. But this here, we don't even have the appearance of a discrepancy, as near as I can tell. I would never, myself, in reading Exodus 34, would never have gotten the impression that we have a different set of Ten Commandments here, because I don't see any Ten Commandments listed in this chapter. So it just seems to be a totally fabricated problem that doesn't really exist, as near as I can tell. All right, Jordan, I hope you're listening, and I hope that answers your question. You're listening to the Narrow Path radio broadcast. We await your phone calls at this number, 1-800-227-5278. And I have another question that was written in by Margaret. And this one, actually, I took it on a previous show, but I was sort of rushed, and I wasn't able to give a very long answer because we were near the end of the show, I think. And she said, "Hi, Steve, I'm currently studying Matthew 5 in small sections. I've read it many times, but for the first time, as I ran across verse 36, I'm confounded, particularly that it is called evil to swear by anything." Excuse me, to swear by anything. My throat is, it's Monday morning, and I haven't really talked yet today. She said she's surprised that it says it's evil to swear by anything. She said that's a pretty powerful statement. Can you illuminate for me the apparent gravity of this commandment? Now, she's talking about the Sermon on the Mount and when Jesus talks about swearing oaths. Now, I think we probably in our society don't understand this phenomenon of swearing oaths. When we talk about somebody swearing, we're thinking of them using profanity or using bad words. In the Bible, swearing was actually a very legitimate practice. In fact, not only legitimate, it was a necessary practice. It was like signing a contract today. If two people were bargaining or making a deal about something, they would seal the deal with an oath. And basically, a party who's agreeing to something would say, I swear by something. He'd name something that he would swear by. And this would mean that he was binding himself to the virtue of that thing that he swore by. In the book of Hebrews in chapter 6, it says men always swear by one greater than themselves, which is, of course, not a criticism. That's just the way it is. If somebody doesn't trust you to keep your word, it's because they don't trust your character. So if you swear by the character of something more sacred than yourself, the assumption is you're invoking, this is a Middle Eastern way of thinking perhaps, but you're invoking the virtue of that thing better than yourself. God, for example, if you swear by God. Now, many Christians think it's wrong to swear by God, but actually in the Old Testament, God commanded Israel to swear in his name rather than to swear in the name of other gods. Basically, to say, I swear by Yahweh or something like that would be to say, you may not trust my character, but certainly you know Yahweh's character, and I'm invoking his character. Certainly you wouldn't think that I would invoke his character and then break my word. You know, any man would have more fear of God than to do that. And therefore, this is the way they sealed a deal. Rather than with a handshake or with a signed contract, they would do it with an oath. Now, the problem that Jesus is addressing, let me read the section where Jesus talks about oaths in Matthew 5. He says, again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but you shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one. Okay, so what is he talking about here? He talks about swearing by Jerusalem, or swearing by heaven, or by earth. These were actually oaths that the Pharisees and the Jews would take when they were trying to, you know, affirm their honesty in some transaction. They would say, I'm swearing by heaven, which was a euphemism for God. They basically say, I'm swearing by God. Or they might say, I'll swear by the earth or by Jerusalem or something else like that. And what Jesus said is, well, listen, every time you swear by anything, it's almost like swearing by God, because heaven is his throne, earth is his footstool, Jerusalem's the city of the great king. So no matter what you swear by, you're invoking God in one way or another. And he said, better not to swear at all. Now, why would that be necessary? The reason is, and Jesus brings this out in Matthew 23, that the Pharisees, the legal expert, had developed a system of oaths which they alone were expert at. And in this system, some oaths were binding and some were not, but the average person didn't know that. You could swear by the temple, which would seem like a binding oath, but they would say, well, no, only if you swear by the gold of the temple is it binding. You could swear by the altar in the temple, and that would certainly sound like a binding oath, but they'd say, no, you have to swear by the gift on the altar, or it's not binding. In other words, the rabbis had made up all these rules about proper binding oaths, and this would allow the expert in the law to deceive people, because he could say, yes, I'll pay you tomorrow, and I swear by the temple I will do it. Well, certainly the person they're in transaction with would think, oh, well, if he swore by the temple, he'll certainly keep his promise. But then when the Pharisee didn't keep his promise, he would say, oh, I didn't swear by the gold of the temple. You should check that out. That the oath I made is not a binding oath. I swore by the temple, but not by the gold of the temple. Jesus actually took this Pharisees to task about this very practice in Matthew 23 and said, "You hypocrites, you say that if one swears by the temple, it's not binding, but swearing by the gold of the temple, it is binding." So you can see that the cultural background of Jesus' statement here is that although in the Middle East people swore oaths to keep them honest, the Jews had come up with conniving ways that they could swear oaths and not be bound by them in their own traditional law system. And the average person didn't know which oaths were binding and which were not, because that was a legal, you know, nicety that only the experts in the law knew. And therefore, many times the Jews had learned how to take advantage of other people by swearing non-binding oaths, or what they thought were non-binding. And Jesus tells his disciples, "Oh, they said, 'I swore by heaven, I didn't swear by God. I swore by Jerusalem, I didn't swear by God, and therefore it's not binding.'" And Jesus said, "Well, if you swear by heaven, that's God's throne. If you swear by Jerusalem, that's the city of the great king. You're not really getting off the hook by making these lesser oaths. No matter what you swear, it's as if you swear by God, and you are leading people astray by doing it." So Jesus just told his disciples, don't even use oaths. Just let your yes be yes. If you just say yes, then keep your word. If you say no, then keep your word. Don't require oaths to keep you honest. That's what Jesus was saying. And it's evil to resort to this system where you're not going to keep your word unless you've taken a binding oath. All right, do we have a caller waiting? I'm hearing things in my headset. That's interesting. Okay, I'm hearing things in my headset, but I thought it might be a caller.
Hello?
Hello. Who is this?
Oh, yeah, this is Danny.
Hi, Danny. Welcome to the Narrow Path. I don't have my computer system telling me who's calling today, so I have to kind of go by ear. Welcome.
Okay, thank you. I had a question. In Revelation chapter 20, I was watching a television pastor this Sunday, and he spoke about hell and the lake of fire, and how actually hell and death and Satan will be cast into the lake of fire. Only he said that the lake of fire is not eternal. It was just everybody gets cast into it, and then that's it. They're done. They're destroyed. So when I looked it up in the Bible, in the New King James Version, it looks to me like it's eternal. So I was just wondering what your thoughts on that would be.
Well, in Revelation 20, it does sound eternal, because it says in verse 10, the devil who deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet are, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. Okay, so it says they'll be tormented day and night forever and ever. Well, that being so, of course, it sounds like torment. And I think that passage generally leads people to that conclusion. Now, there is something to consider, and there are people who do have different views of, hell, and they do so with some justification, although, you know, it's actually very controversial. I've written a book on the three views of hell. And what they would say here is, this is symbolic. You know, the book of Revelation is full of symbolic visions, and therefore even the devil is referred to, you know, in the book of Revelation as a dragon or a serpent, which is, they would say, obviously a symbolic description of him. And that being so, we've got some symbolism here. And it even says they're tormented day and night. Well, in hell, there would be no day and night. Day and night were, created on the, the first day of creation. And they're not part of eternity. You need to have, in order to have day and night, you need to pretty much have a sun and moon and stars and those kinds of things, you'd think. And so they would say there's no day and night in heaven or in hell. So this reference to being tormented day and night simply means, I don't know, it's using imagery that we can relate to on earth. And there are some who have different views of this particular passage because of that. Now, this is a good passage, probably as good as it gets, to support the idea of an eternal torment in hell. It's the only actual passage that uses the expression tormented forever and ever. And yet some would say, well, this doesn't really speak of people, normal people being tormented forever and ever. It talks about the devil and the beast and the false prophet, which many people think that the beast and the false prophet are not individuals, but that they represent systems, non-human entities. After all, in verse 14, it says that death and Hades are also thrown into the lake of fire, as if they are individuals, but death and Hades are not individuals. They are treated symbolically as individuals in the book of Revelation. For example, in Revelation 6, it says that when the fourth seal was broken and the fourth horseman came out, the fourth horseman was death and Hades was following. So you've got Hades and death personified as characters in the drama in Revelation early on. And here we have death and Hades thrown into the lake of fire along with the devil, the beast, and the false prophet. Some people say all of these entities are symbolic. And, I mean, death isn't really a person. Death is death, and Hades is Hades. And yet the Revelation is talking about them as if they're actual characters being thrown into, you know, the lake of fire. Now, we do read in the final verse that all whose names were not written in the book of life are also cast in the lake of fire. But it is not stated clearly whether, after that, they, like the devil himself, are tormented day and night forever and ever. That may be assumed. But some people say it can't be necessarily assumed. And so there are different views about this passage. And I think there's room for different views about the passage because of the symbolism of the book of Revelation. The person you were listening to was apparently a believer in conditional immortality. And I would even say might have been a Seventh-day Adventist. If you're watching on television, it could have been a Seventh-day Adventist because they teach conditional immortality. But they're not the only people who teach it. There are other evangelicals who hold to that view. And so they are, you know, they have to take a lot of things in this particular passage non-literally in order to, you know, in order to hold to the view of conditional immortality. On the other hand, there are other passages in the Bible that would seem favorable to their view. And frankly, there's three different views of hell, and there are passages in the Bible that seem favorable to all of them. And that's why I've written a book comparing the three views, which you might be interested in reading if you're interested in more information about these different interpretations. My name is Steve Gregg, and if you're looking for that book, you can just go onto christianbook.com and put my name in there in my two books, one that compares the four views of Revelation and the one that compares the three views of hell, can be found there. All right, let's talk to Dave from Garden Grove. Dave, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Yes, with respect to the comments about atheists and Exodus 34 and two sets of Ten Commandments.
Yes.
I ran into that set of such people almost 4 years ago, and it didn't occur to me until after I'd met them that there's a wonderful tactic one can use to answer that question. May I say so?
Sure.
Okay. The first thing to do when somebody confronting somebody like that is to ask, first of all, where is the beginning of the set of Ten Commandments and where is the end of it in Exodus 34?
Yeah.
Having confined the discussion to that passage, then ask, where is the fourth commandment? Where is the eighth? Where is the fifth, the seventh, the ninth, the first, the second, the tenth, and so forth, and the third? The point is that it's too easy to ask the atheist, where is the first, the second, the third, and the fourth? He might just block out text in order. But if you give them in scrambled order, then it commits them to passages, especially since he doesn't know what the next question is going to be, until he's run out of room and can't give answers after a while because it's obvious that the passages that are left over can't be commandments anymore. They don't make any sense.
Okay.
The leftover passages don't make any sense as commandments. So I would advocate that sort of position. And if I ever meet any of these people again, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Okay. Well, see, a lot of our listeners may not know what you're talking about, but I do. I mean, there really is no enumerated list of commandments, certainly not 10, in Exodus 34. And yet some people say that Exodus 34 gives an alternative set of 10 commandments different than the set that is found in Exodus 20. Now, what you're saying is number them then. Okay, let's see what the numbers are on these. Let me read this, the passage, if I could. I think they would probably begin it. I'm not sure which one they would say begins it, but it does say in verse 14, you shall worship no other god, for the Lord whose name is Jealous is Jealous God. Now, that would seem to be a little bit like the first commandment. Then it says, lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land. So don't make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land. That's not in the Ten Commandments. And then verse 18, the Feast of Unleavened Bread you shall keep. Well, the Feast of Unleavened Bread is not in the Ten Commandments. There is a Sabbath commandment in verse 21, but there's also a reference to committing born to God, which is not in the Ten Commandments. There's a whole bunch of miscellaneous laws here, and they're not the Ten Commandments. I think the reason that they say that these are alternate views of the Ten Commandments is that in verse 27 and 28, it says, then the Lord said to Moses, write these words, for according to the tenor of these words, I have made a covenant with you and with Israel. So he was there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights. He neither ate bread nor drank water, and he wrote on the tablets the words of the Ten Commandments. Now, I think what they're thinking is that what God told him to write there in chapter 34 are supposedly the Ten Commandments. But that's not necessarily what it's saying. It's saying Moses did write the Ten Commandments on the stones. He also wrote all these other things he was told to write. That's why we have them. He didn't write them all on stone, and they're not all the Ten Commandments. He wrote the Ten Commandments, but he also wrote these other things too. So there's nothing in the passage would even suggest for a moment that what we have listed in chapter 34 are the Ten Commandments. And as you say, one way to prove it is if someone says they are, to say, okay, where's the fourth commandment here? Which one is number seven? Because there's just not ten there, and they won't be able to enumerate them like that, like you can in chapter 20.
Yes, that's the whole. But the whole point about asking for the numbers in scrambled order rather than straight order is to get them to commit to passages. In other words, block. I'd say, all right, is this what you claim the fourth commandment is? Okay, let's block that out as the fourth commandment. In other words, it's not going to be in the fifth or the third, for example. Now, go for number eight. Where is number eight? And block out that one, and so forth until until the passages that are blocked out leave only passages can't possibly be commandments anymore.
Right.
That's the
all
reason
right.
why to scramble them rather than to ask them in straight order.
I hear you, and I think you're right. I think that would be an effective way to show that we're not supposed to find Ten Commandments in this passage.
Mm-hmm. That was my comment.
All right. Well, I appreciate your comment. Thank you, Dave, and call again sometime. Bye now. All right, you're listening to The Narrow Path. We only have a few minutes left, but if you'd like to be on, we have lines open at 1-800-227-5278. That's 1-800-227-5278. If you call now, you can get right through. I want to say, because I don't have opportunity to say it very much on the air, I want to tell you something about the two books I mentioned earlier. Now, I don't sell books. I don't sell anything. But you can get my books from places that do sell books. You can get them from christianbook.com. You can get them from amazon.com. I've got two books that have been out for some time now. Both are published by Thomas Nelson Publishers. And one of them is called Revelation, Four Views, A Parallel Commentary. It's a 600-page book, and it compares side by side in parallel columns four different views of each passage of the book of Revelation. There are four major approaches to Revelation, and this book goes through all four of them for each passage. It gives what the commentators say from each of these viewpoints. The other book is called All You Want to Know About Hell, Three Christian Views, and you can find that book also in the same listing if you put my name, Steve Gregg, in any of the listings at online booksellers. And you can find those if you're interested in looking up those three different views of hell and studying them more in detail. Richard from Seal Beach, welcome to The Narrow Path. Thanks for calling.
Yes, Steve, I just wanted to make a comment. I think the first commandment is Genesis 9, verse 6.
Well, that's not one of the Ten Commandments, though. Oh, he hung up. All right. Well, okay. We were talking about whether or not the Bible has two different contrary lists of Ten Commandments. And some atheists say that it does contain them. What Dave and I, the previous caller and I, were saying is not so. All right. Let's talk to Gypsy from Alhambra, California. Is that right? Gypsy, is that you?
Yes, it's me. I just want to ask the question.
What happened? Oh, my goodness. You just got hung up on, and I didn't do it. Actually, my switchboard is flashing. All the lines are flashing, and I'll bet our previous caller got cut off too. There is something, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, we're having some kind of a technical difficulty that we don't understand, and with the phones and things like that. And so, my apologies if you've been calling the program and getting cut off. It is it was not intentional, and. If you can call back, Gypsy, I'd like to hear your question. You may not know it, but I have a daughter named Gypsy, and that's her real name. So that's kind of interesting. I've never met another or heard from another Gypsy, but that's my oldest daughter's name. If you want to try to call back, we only have a couple minutes, but I hope we could get to your call. The number is 1-800-227-5278. That's 1-800-227-5278. And since we are seemingly having problems with our switchboard here, and we will get those solved before tomorrow. I'll just give out the information I have to give at the end of the program, which is that we are a listener-supported ministry. We do this Monday through Friday for a half hour each morning. Usually the phones are working better than they are today, and they will be, Lord willing, tomorrow. If you'd like to help us pay the radio bills to keep us on the air, you can write to The Narrow Path, P.O. Box 1730, Temecula, California, 92593. Or you can go to our website, which is thenarrowpath.com. Now, there's lots of free resources at thenarrowpath.com. There's nothing for sale there, but there are hundreds of MP3 files of lectures you can download. You might want to check that out. It's at thenarrowpath.com. My name is Steve Gregg. Again, I hope to be able to talk to you without technical problems tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in each weekday and join us on the program. Till then, may God bless you. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for joining us today for The Narrow Path with Steve Gregg, a live interactive call-in program that usually can take your calls with ease. And we're so glad that you were with us this morning, and we hope you'll be with us all week long as Steve continues to give the answers that you need to the questions that you have about the Bible or about something that you've encountered in your spiritual journey that you need some help with. And we hope you'll continue to call in. In the meantime, if you'd like to support the ministry of The Narrow Path, you need to be able to go to Steve's website. It's thenarrowpath.com. And right there, you will find a place to give. It's very safe and it's secure, and it's something that you can do in a very easy way. That's at thenarrowpath.com. However, if you'd like to be able to give in another way and you'd like to not do that online, then do give us a call here at K-Bright for additional contact information for Steve. The number here at K-Bright is 800-227-2337. And please remember that the views and opinions on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Crawford Broadcasting Company, its ownership, management, or its advertisers. Joyce Myers coming up next on AM 740, K-Bright.
The Department of Justice has identified the 20 top areas in the United States for human trafficking, and three of those 20 are in California. Human trafficking is happening here, and Christians need to fight it. Learn more. We dedicate July to human trafficking awareness on The Bottom Line, weekdays from 3 to 5.
33 years of good news. 50,000 watt KBRT at KBRT HD Costa Mesa, and on the web at KBRT740.com.
Welcome to Enjoying Everyday Life with New York Times bestselling author Joyce Meyer. On today's program, Joyce will be teaching from her series entitled Pursuing What Matters Most. Does it feel like you're always chasing after something but never actually achieving it? Maybe you're chasing success or a relationship, or maybe you're chasing away pain and loss. Your heart can desire a lot of things, but does it desire the one thing that matters most? When you pursue a relationship with God, He will pursue after you. He wants to have a relationship and give you the desires of your heart. All you need to do is look past those things and look to Him.
Listen today as Joyce will help you begin putting God first and experiencing all that He has for you. Now, here's Joyce with today's teaching, Pursuing What Matters Most.
We're going to have a good weekend. Let's open up to Romans 14, 17. This is going to be our foundation scripture for the weekend. I'm so glad that you all came, and I hope you really enjoy yourself. And that you just not enjoy yourself, but get something really great that's going to make a difference in your life. After all, the kingdom of God is not a matter of getting. We could just stop right there. After all, the kingdom of God is not a matter of getting the food and the drink that one likes. And I think really when he says food and drink there, we really need to expand that and just say, you know, the kingdom of God is not about us getting everything we want when we want it. That's not what it's about. You know, the disciples in Jesus' day, they thought that he had come to set up an earthly kingdom and that he was going to put all their enemies in their place and he was going to do away with evil and he was going to set up this throne somewhere and they were all going to get to rule alongside him. And he tried to tell them that he came to set up a different kind of kingdom. He said, the kingdom of God is in you. It's not necessarily about what goes on around us, but it's inside of us. And a kingdom is a domain or a realm that a king resides.